We've been spending a lot of time covering the Montezuma County Agricultural Extension. The Montezuma County Commissioners voted to defund the extension a few weeks back, a move which later turned out to be a negotiating tactic to attract more attention to the county extension office. Since then, we've spoken to extension officials, including the extension director Tom Hooten and his boss at Colorado State University, C.J. Mucklow, about why extensions are important and what makes them run well. Meanwhile, in Dolores County, their extension director has won an award for Volunteer of the Year from the Economic Development Council of Colorado. That was back in October, celebrating excellence in economic development. Gus Westerman is the director of the Dolores County Extension. He joins me now here in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Austin?
Great. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I want to talk about your award in just a little bit, but first, can you tell me about how the Dolores County Extension runs?
Well, we're a very small county, very rural county, and the beauty of the structure of the way CSU Extension is set up is that we're very community-based, and we're allowed to address the needs in our individual communities. So Dolores County, our main focuses are agricultural programming, community and economic development, and of course the 4-H program. So those are our three main focuses, and then, you know, things definitely kind of satellite off from there.
Dolores County is probably one of the most agricultural counties in the state. It seems like there's a lot of agriculture. How does the extension office play into the amount of agriculture that Dolores has?
Well, we act as a resource for all of the producers out there. There's definitely a lot of challenges when it comes to dry land production. 90% of the agriculture in Dolores County is dry land. We're dealing with 12 to 15 inches of precipitation a year, so there's a lot of management practices that have to be followed to be successful out there. And so we are constantly working to come up with new techniques, looking into new technologies to try to keep the agriculture industry out there a feasible and productive and profitable industry.
When you talk about profitable, that gets back to economic development, which is part of that's what you were awarded for by the Colorado Economic Development Council. How does agriculture play into the economy?
Agriculture is a very large part of the economy. Actually, 32% of the agricultural industry out there is 32% of our essentially our economy, and that includes all of the farmers, all of the farm support, retail businesses, pretty much everything involved there. So it really is it's a huge employer for us, and it's one of our main economic drivers, if not our main economic driver.
What challenges do you run up against when you see, there's a lot of changing factors in how agriculture is happening right now? What's hard to, when you're talking to farmers, what are things that they're seeing right now that are hard?
Right now, probably the main thing that comes to mind would be our low commodity prices that we're dealing with. We're pretty limited on the crops that we're able to grow, and a lot of those crops right now are really not worth much. You look at wheat, for example, which is one of our main crops. We're looking at $4 a hundredweight, and right now it's very difficult to make it because they're below that break-even point whenever you're looking at a price point like that. So that's probably one of the main challenges. The other challenge is, we're constantly looking. We have a new focus on our soil health. And our soils out there, that's our main resource that we're using to grow these crops, of course. And that's probably our main focus. One big thing that we're working on through we're partnering with the Southwest Colorado Research Center in Yellow Jacket we're working on a dryland cover crops project. We're in our third year of this project, and we've just applied for another 3 years of funding. And so we are investigating the feasibility of cover crops on the dryland to see how they will impact our agricultural industry as a whole.
What does it take to run a well-functioning extension office?
Well, I think there's two very important factors that have to be looked at whenever we're talking extension, and the biggest one is relevance. Relevance is huge. We you know, we are we're an educational service, and but the great thing about it is the people that we work with want to work with us. They seek us out. So we have to be relevant. We have to make sure that we have the information that they are looking for. Otherwise, you know, there wouldn't be a reason for them to talk to us.
What's relevant and what's not?
Well, at this point in Dolores County, you know, of course, agricultural work is most definitely very relevant. Also, economic development work that I work with. I work with a lot of businesses. I chair our economic development group out there, and so we're very focused on business retention. You know, we're looking at our business community and making sure that they can sustain out there as well.
Gus Westerman is the director of the Dolores County Extension Office. He's joining me here in the studios. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Austin.
The time is 8:41. I'm glad you're joining us here on Morning Edition on this Friday morning, the 1st of December. If you missed any part of my interview just a few minutes ago with Gus Westerman of the Dolores County Extension, you can check it out at ksjd.org. Stay with us for national news headlines coming up in just a moment. In about 20 minutes, it's the KSJD Daytime Collective. That's followed by Native America Calling this morning at 11. And today at noon, it's Big Picture Science.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Michael Flynn is in a federal courtroom in Washington at this hour. President Trump's former national security advisor is expected to plead guilty to making false statements to the FBI. Prosecutors and special counsel Robert Mueller's office say the plea stems from statements made by Flynn about conversations he had with Russia's then ambassador to the U.S. NPR's Carrie Johnson has more.
We know, based on testimony from former acting attorney general Sally Yates, that she was concerned that Mike Flynn had allegedly lied to the FBI in January. We also know that Mike Flynn has been under investigation for a whole host of other activities and allegations, and pleading guilty to a single charge seems to cap his legal exposure, a sign that perhaps he has a lot to tell the special counsel about other people involved in this investigation, and a sign that he is talking about others.
The state of Hawaii is testing its siren warning system today. It comes amid heightened tensions over North Korea's nuclear program. As Bill Dorman with Hawaii Public Radio reports, the system normally warns of tsunamis and other natural disasters, but this time it'll include a tone indicating an impending nuclear attack.
State officials have been talking about this for months, and it's always coupled with phrases like remote possibility. Governor David Ige calls it part of the new normal.
I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News in Washington.
I'm Brent McWhorter, co-owner of Moose & Moore in Cortez. And I just wanted to say that working with KSJD or marketing with them has been very beneficial for us. And they're the first place that we go to when we need to do anything in the community.
Click on the support link at KSJD.org to find out more about how KSJD can help you market your business.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Novo Nordisk, working to defeat diabetes for more than 90 years through prevention, diagnosis, and treatment. More at novonordisk.us. From Charles Schwab, who believes a modern approach to wealth management starts with asking questions and providing straightforward answers. Charles Schwab, own your tomorrow. Learn more at schwab.com. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning, I'm David Green.
And I'm Rachel Martin. Parents are not supposed to play favorites with their kids, but we have known for a long time that firstborns often have an advantage over their younger siblings. New research examines whether firstborns are more likely to become CEOs. NPR's Shankar Vedantam is here in our studios to explain. Hi, Shankar.
Hi, Rachel.
So let's start first with the idea that parents play favorites with their oldest kids. We kind of always suspect this is true. Now there's research that actually says as much.
There's been research for a while. And in some cases, of course, parents do play favorites, but sometimes parents can't help playing favorites. I was talking to Stefan Siegel. He's an economist at the University of Washington in Seattle. He told me he was chatting with his co-author, Claudia Custodio, in London, about how firstborns have an advantage because for some period of time, they get to enjoy their parents' undivided attention. Custodio said that was the case with her kids.
She probably paid more attention in some sense to her first child than to her second child. And so the question was basically, did this potentially have an impact on the development of the first child relative to the second child? Even though they otherwise, of course, grow up in the same environment, brought up by the same parents.
Okay, so we've established that parents can play favorites. They give their firstborns inevitably more attention because they were just around them longer. Presumably, that means they just have all kinds of advantages in life, right?
That's exactly right. They do have all kinds of advantages, and other studies have shown this. What these researchers were looking at specifically was the likelihood that these advantages translate into someone becoming a CEO.
Wow.
They were looking at primarily small to medium-sized companies in the United States, and they find that oldest children, especially oldest sons, are more likely to become CEOs than their younger siblings. This is especially true in family-owned firms, possibly because that's how we've long thought about family succession. You know, it's a little like Game of Thrones in some ways. The researchers find two interesting things. One, this effect is starting to fade away, so it's less true when it comes to younger CEOs. And second, the effect has an important exception.
We don't have any birth order effect for those cases where we identify the CEO as also the founder of the firm. The setting where you start something completely new, take on a lot of risk, might actually be a characteristic of later borns.
So being a younger born child might actually put you in good stead. You might be someone who takes more risks, which is probably a good thing if you're going to start a startup?
That's exactly what these researchers are finding. Now, it's worth stating here, Rachel, that birth order effects tend to be endlessly interesting, but it's worth looking at them the way you look at personality tests. You know, they can tell you some interesting things. They can tell you about some of the things that influence your behavior, but they're not deterministic. So whether or not you, Rachel, become a CEO is less about whether you're an older sibling or a younger sibling. It's more about you.
Okay, Shankar Vedantam, he is NPR social science correspondent. He's also the host of a podcast and a radio show that explores the unseen patterns in human behavior. It is called Hidden Brain. Shankar, thanks so much.
Thanks, Rachel.
Support for Hidden Brain comes from Eli Lilly and Company, striving to unite caring with discovery to make life better. Stories on what inspires Lilly scientists in their pursuit of life-changing medicines are available at lillyforbetter.com.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Our theme music is written by BJ Lederman and arranged by Jim Pugh. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm David Greene.